the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov, the Siri Foundation, Margaret Casey Foundation, Progressive and Social Justice Fund of the Alaska Community Foundation, Atwood Foundation, Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
I'm Dime Roberts, Stage and Studio. Before we go today, a personal shout out for a play my nonprofit Media Rights and our Theater Diaspora program is doing. The Brothers Paranormal by Prince Gomovilas is about two Thai American brothers who start a ghost hunting business, and their first clients are an African American couple who believe they are being haunted by a Thai girl ghost. It's a comedy with depth and brings up issues of grief, loss, and displacement in cultural communities. The Brothers Paranormal is receiving its Northwest premiere October 25th through November 16th at Coho Productions. More info at cohoproductions.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.
Good morning. Coming up next is Art Focus. Joseph Gallivan interviews public artist Ed Carpenter about the Barbara Walker Crossing. KBOO programming, KBOO programming, is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events, located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information online at cstpdx.com. And now, Art Focus.
Whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Andy Mon, my whoa, whoa, Andy, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ed Carpenter. He's a public artist based in Portland. He's the designer of the Barbara Walker Crossing, a new pedestrian bridge across Burnside, which carries the Wildwood Trail from Forest Park to Washington Park. And it opens on October 27th. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO, Ed.
Happy to be here, Joseph.
So this bridge, I've seen it, pictures of it. It's been pretty much installed, but it's not open yet. And all the drawings I've seen of it is it's a very sculptural bridge. It's, you know, it's got sort of green spikes coming off it. It's just, it's not your normal bridge, let's just say that. And it's only for pedestrians, not bicycles. So just tell us, What's the origin of this bridge? Why did you get involved as opposed to somebody else?
I got involved because, first of all, has been a very dangerous crossing there for forever, and we're very lucky that no one's ever been killed there. Mm-hmm. Three lanes of traffic on West Burnside, posted at 45, everybody's going 55, dangerous slope and blind curve. Mm-hmm. And about 10,000 cars a day, 20,000 hikers a year on the Wildwood Trail, many of whom would like to cross there but have been deterred from doing so. And I had designed some bridges, and 8 or 9 years ago, I was approached by a local architect, Andrew Wheeler, who had been working with a small citizens group for a long time trying to get a bridge off the ground there. The city had previously studied whether it was possible to signalize that crossing, go under, or build a bridge. And in fact, there had been some bridge designs commissioned, but they hadn't gotten traction. Mm-hmm. Because I have been a trail runner for decades, and in fact, I am a 40-year crossing of that very, 40-year survivor of that very crossing.
I should point out, this is Burnside, just east of the Barnes Road little junction. So you're not far, you know, you're only like a half a mile up from Zupans going west.
That's right. It's about halfway between Zupans and the junction you mentioned. It's just east of the tunnels on West Burnside.
And the trail traditionally just comes down. You scramble down to street level, and then it's like a game of Frogger. You just like go for it and try not to
get hit. And it's a 30-mile-long trail, this marvelous amenity that Portland has. And one of the reasons people come to Portland and stay in Portland is because of the access to nature. And we are adjacent to this fabulous park, or series of parks, which the spine of which is the Wildwood Trail, and it's crossed by roads in only four places, and only one of those is really dangerous. So I got involved, A, because I had done some bridges, and B, because there was this initiative already started. And I quickly involved engineers that I had worked with before. They worked with me pro bono, and instantly I knew that this is a crossing where the bridge should melt into the scenery as much as possible. It should be part of the forest context, and it should provide a seamless, continuous experience for the walkers and runners on the Wildwood Trail, and not be an imposition on the context. So it's not a gateway to Portland. It's for the runners and walkers on the trail, and it's meant to be an extension of the trail. And so what does that mean? It means it should be relatively transparent and delicate. It should, its form should feel like the forms in the surrounding nature. Critically, I sensed instantly that it should have, or instantly, not instantly, but during a process of studying this site, that it should have a curving deck. Mm-hmm. The trail is undulating and curving. I thought it would be more of an imposition to have a stop and then a turn onto a straight bridge. Mm-hmm. So if we could make it curving, I said to the engineers right off, that would be the best. And we've been able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So if you are running down the trail from the north side and you come to this bridge, are you sort of already curving before it's on its first elevation?
Yes, and what you'll encounter is a tiny wide spot that is paved with donor recognition. And there are some 900 donors, private citizens, as well as a number of nonprofits and foundations and the city and Metro who have funded this bridge. And they're all recognized in this tiny donor recognition area, which will slow you down a bit before you get to the bridge. But you will have seen the bridge by then, so you'll know something is happening.
Mm-hmm. So then you're on the bridge, and is it pretty wide, or can you fall off it?
You can't fall off it. It feels quite wide because it has wings or arms or branches that extend outward. Mm-hmm. The actual walking path is 6 feet wide and has a railing 48 inches high. Mm-hmm. So it's very safe. The bottom of it is 20 feet above West Burnside, but you're up there in the trees, and so it feels very much like being in the forest as you cross.
Mm-hmm. And then the actual cross section is a kind of V shape, so even though there's a railing, you know, kind of hedging you in, the senses of the bridge sort of, you're in the bottom of a big V.
Yes, the structural type is a tricord truss, so it has three longitudinal members that form a triangle in section, and with crisscross members, and that's what creates the strength to span from the north abutment to the pier, which is offset just to the south of the roadway, and then to the south abutment. And those structural members that are crisscrossing through the edges of that tricord truss are extended upward so that they can carry the railings and then beyond, so that you get a sense of this being more expressive than just a standard deck bridge.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a bit about the inspiration for the green spines that some of them are green, some of them are going to be just steel, which will rust. Tell me about
Well, it's just extending the structure of the bridge and making the structure expressive. Rather than sticking art onto a bridge, which is sometimes done, I like to find a structural system for the bridge that can be pushed in a an expressive direction. Mm-hmm. And so these diagonals exist anyway. They're part of what holds up the bridge. And by simply extending them upward and painting some of them a different color, we can make it suggest forms that one associates with the Wildwood Trail. So these forms feel like sword ferns or vine maples or trees that you see along the 30-mile length of the trail.
Mm-hmm. So the extension, it's a practical piece of steel that's doing something, but by extending it, it becomes art.
Yeah, it becomes something more than it has to be at a relatively low cost that makes it distinctive and makes it a unique bridge for this place.
Mm-hmm. Did you do a lot of research on the type of plants, or is this just your common knowledge from being a user?
Yeah, 40 years of research every day for a minimum of an hour.
That's incredible. What kind of distances do you run?
Well, I'm more of a hiker now at 70, okay. at age 72, but I have run the entire Wildwood Trail all at once when I was preparing for the Portland Marathon.
Wow.
And my typical daily run was 5 to 7 miles. On the weekends, I had a bunch of buddies I ran with, and we would typically run 7 to 15 miles.
Wow, that's amazing. How has the park use changed over the decades?
It's busier now, and there's a lot of pressure to open certain trails to bicycles, which I'm not in favor of.
Is that because bicyclists tend to hog the road or bump into people or what?
All of the above. Bicycles are great in wider areas and flatter areas and areas where solitude is less important. To me, the great asset of Forest Park and the Wildwood Trail in specific is solitude.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I go there. I don't go there to have vehicles on my path. I go there to be in the woods and to hear the birds and the wind through the trees and the soft sounds of the rain falling. I don't wear headphones and listen to music when I'm in the forest. I want to be in the forest as much as possible. To me, that's the great value of Forest Park. And so that makes it, the solitary nature of that experience is preserved by foot traffic much more than it is by wheeled traffic.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Portland's become a tourist city in the last, you know, 40 years, right? You go on the trail and the people from other countries who are doing Portland, and one of the things they have to do is Forest Park. So it's got very busy. Does this part of the trail, is this one of the most busy parts?
It will be once the bridge is now that the bridge is in. I mean, it connects two other great amenities, Pittock Mansion and the Arboretum, and you haven't been able easily to get back and forth between them. Mm-hmm. And so I think there will be a lot more people traveling between them now that the bridge is there. I love the fact that people, when runners come to visit Nike or to compete in this area, they train on the Wildwood Trail. That's lovely. And then, as you say, a lot of those are international visitors.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that there are international people or people coming from outside of Portland. There was recently an initiative to have a visitor center for the Wildwood for Forest Park, which I found to be antithetical to the idea of the park, because I think, fine, make a website to tell people about Forest Park. Well, we don't need a visitor center. We certainly don't need any zip lines or, you know, that kind of thing. I think we can all find Forest Park if we want to. And if we need to improve the parking, great, let's do that. But we don't need a visitor center.
Mm-hmm. But this part of the trail is going to be pretty busy. Like, if you want a quiet run, you should go further north, basically.
Well, you can, at certain times of day, you can be quite solitary on the southern end of the Wildwood Trail.
Okay.
I mean, you might see one or two people there, but it's not like there are big crowds. And if you want the most solitary experience, yes, go to the north end, way out by St. John's,
mm-hmm.
and you'll hardly ever see anybody out there at all.
Mm-hmm. So you're a public artist. You've got art all over the world. These are usually very big sculptures. People could see one down at PSU on Fourth and College, at the engineering building. But so you've you've been designing for the public for years, and you've seen how they interact with your work and then how your work changes over time. I'm really interested in the idea of a bridge. I imagine the first time people go on it, they're going to hang around and just look around for a while. How do you think people will be using this bridge in 5 years when it's sort of become established?
I think that most people, even, yes, it'll have some novelty, which may get people to linger there now, but I think most people who will be using the bridge will be in transition from one place to another, and they may stop to take in the view and watch the cars go underneath briefly, but they're having a trail experience, and mm-hmm. I hope that the bridge is just part of that trail, and it's a little different, but it doesn't have a belvedere, a wide spot in the middle where you can sit and are invited to linger. It's meant to be a continuation of the trail.
Oh, okay, right. So the alternative would have been someone building a straight kind of concrete thing that goes, it just looks like a normal crossing of a road. And that would have been a bit jarring to the trail experience?
I think it would have been less like the rest of the trail. And the idea of the bridge, of the design of the bridge, is it to have it have similar characteristics, so it feels as if it belongs there as opposed to anywhere else, and it feels as if it's a bridge made for there that you really couldn't take and put just anywhere.
Mm-hmm. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ed Carpenter. He's a public artist who designed the Barbara Walker Crossing, a new pedestrian bridge across Burnside in Forest Park, and that opens on Sunday the 27th of October. There's a sort of public party in the street from 8 a.m. to noon that day. Ed, tell us about your process. Do you start with a paper and pen? Do you start with a 3D rendering in SketchUp? What are you using these days?
My process starts way before I ever put pen to paper. And it starts trying to understand a site, to understand what does this site want? What is it, a site? Has it been defined properly? Is it over here or is it over there? Is it foreground or background? Is it asking for something which is tall or horizontal, something that's colorful or subdued, something that is strident or modest, something that's shiny or dull? What is this? What kind of imposition on this site or introduction of another object into this site would make it more successful for what it's for? So I start working that way, from the general to the specific, asking a series of questions to help me understand what my design objectives are. And in this case, my design objectives were that it should be a safe crossing, that it should be relatively transparent and delicate, and that it should be a continuous experience, should continue the experience for the runners and walkers, that it should be easy to construct off-site and bring in with minimum disruption of West Burnside, and that it should be affordable. So those are the kinds of design objectives that I start with. And from there, I try to deduce, not induce, but deduce where my path of discovery should go. And then I slowly, through sketching with pencil and paper.
What kind of pencil?
Oh, just a yellow pencil, number two, or whatever that is. Doesn't have to be a special thing. Doesn't have to be special paper. It's just to get the ideas out of my head onto the paper as quickly as possible. I start that way, and I sketch a series of explorations of those concepts that I have come to in that self-examination. And then, when I come up with ideas that I think are ready for it, then I draft in pencil, plan elevation section for my concept, And then I give it to a computer modeler, and it's modeled in CAD. And then I can look at it from all different sides, and from inside and out, and I can understand the parts that I didn't understand clearly from my hand sketching, and I can make modifications of the computer model. And that continues this path of discovery until I'm satisfied that I have a scheme. And then perhaps I'll do another scheme and another scheme. And so I can compare all of those, and I can even show those to a client. I'm generally working for a client rather than just for me, because these projects are generated by public agencies normally. In this case, the rare thing about the Wildwood Bridge is that I had a role in generating it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was an instigator and not just a responder.
You were a design instigator, right?
Well, I was not only a design instigator, but then once I had a design that I was satisfied with and that I had collaborated with my engineers on, I took it around to all the nonprofits that are engaged with and interested in the park, all the neighborhood associations, the city bureaus that are involved with the park, the mayor, and lots of other people, and I promoted this bridge for a couple of years, with some help, but basically that was my project, and eventually was able to convince the Portland Parks Foundation to take it on as a capital project. And then for the ensuing 6 years or so, they have been involved, and they've done a wonderful job of coalescing this broad coalition of agencies and foundations and individuals who have raised the money. And now Portland Parks Foundation has not only raised the money for the bridge, but they have also organized the construction of it. They've hired the contractors, and they're managing all of this publicity and the opening and so on. And they've been the umbrella organization to really make it happen.
Mm-hmm. So there's this old saying, you know, when we make art, we make it for ourselves. When we design for others. How have you balanced those two things? It sounds like you started off designing for yourself, but then as all these other stakeholders came on board, they all have their own needs and desires. How did you sort of adapt to what other people wanted?
I was never designing for myself. I was always designing for the site. And that's what I do, is design for the site and for the... This site is a little different because its users are different than the types of sites I frequently am involved with. But the site is always demanding something or a number of things. And the site will be standing in judgment of this work forever. And so that's my client. The site is my client. And in this case, it was relatively easy to generate enthusiasm because everyone loves the park, everyone loves the Wildwood Trail. Everyone quickly saw the need or already knew the need for a bridge there. And the one design among the various ones that I developed that I chose to present to the public was the best and was very well received. So there was never a question of others trying to influence the design of the bridge.
Mm-hmm. So some of your other work, if people go to your website, edcarpenter.net, they'll see a beautiful portfolio of work from around the world. There's one in Taiwan called the Tai Chung centerpiece. It's called Crocus, right? It looks like based on a crocus poking through the snow. Tell us about that, because it's interesting. Your approach to the, you know, it was a competition, and they had this round platform above a parking garage, and they wanted to put a piece of art on the viewing platform. And what did you think?
When I saw the site and the brief, I was interested in the fact that this round viewing platform, which is accessed by a bridge, a very small bridge, from a park that covers this parking garage, would be clogged up and taken up if you put sculpture on the viewing platform. And my proposal, rather than to put something on the platform, was to surround it starting down in the parking garage and come up around it through the spiral staircase that accesses the parking garage, and then up another 40 feet above the level of the park, so that the sculpture could be seen on access from the city administration buildings and the opera house, which surround it.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than being something that uses space, it creates space. It created a space on the platform and surrounded it. And fortunately, that was a successful proposal.
Mm-hmm. So the experience is you're viewing the square you're in, but you're also within like a flower. You're in the sort of bud, the flower of a crocus. But it's transparent. It's all open. And it's sort of rainbow-colored glass, and it's brightly lit at night. So that's the experience of being enclosed, but being able to see.
Yeah, it's a very transparent structure. So although you're in it, you can see out, and you have very much a sense of being part of this civic center, that the centerpiece of which is the bridge, and the centerpiece of that, is this spiral staircase down into the parking garage.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone in Portland should get down to the Massey School of Engineering at PSU. Fourth and College, there's this new, you know, block, modern block where all the engineers are. But outside it, on the little plaza, there's this twisted steel or aluminum sculpture. It sort of bends into the sky, and it has bright lights on it, you know, at night. What do you call that? It's got a strange name.
The title of the sculpture is Tekotage. That word is made up from the first two letters of the four principal concerns of structural engineering: tension, compression, torsion, and shear. And that derives from the fact that the building which is next to it, one of the two buildings next to it, which generated the funds for the sculpture through the state public art program, houses engineers of various sorts. One type of engineer that work in that building is our structural engineers. The brief for that particular competition was to do something that worked with the plaza, which had already been designed, and if possible, that would point back between the buildings toward Lovejoy Fountain, which is one of the wonderful Lawrence Halprin fountains that we have in Portland, which that one is relatively concealed. And there was also a suggestion that it might be a sort of a gateway to Portland State, which I don't think it ever could have been or is. But I saw my role there as creating space under the sculpture. So it's like the Taichung sculpture in the sense that it creates space with its gesture, and it arches through the plaza in such a way that it I think invites people to inhabit the space beneath it.
Mm-hmm. Have you stood around and watched people using the area?
I have, and there are now a lot of food carts right across the street in what used to be a parking lot over there, and so people get their food there and then come across. If it's a sunny day, they can sit in this west-facing plaza and eat their lunch on the benches there under the sculpture. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a lovely scene.
So it's pure sculpture because it's not, you know, it's not carrying anything except lights. So people can just sit there and look up at it.
And you don't have to look at it. You can just feel it. It's not begging for to be decoded, or it doesn't carry a secret message. It doesn't represent anything other than, it's obviously an interesting thing from a standpoint of engineering. It's mm-hmm. It's unusual. It's an unusual structure. Mm-hmm. And
is it another tricord truss?
It is indeed.
Is it twisted?
Yes, it twists in space. It doesn't twist, it curves,
a single
simple curve in space, but it's also supported by a bunch of very slender columns, and it's in tension, so it does exemplify all of those basic principles of structural engineering.
Mm-hmm. So this Barbara Walker Crossing opens on Sunday the 27th. There's a they're going to close the Burnside for a little bit, like half a mile, maybe under.
Yes, there will be one lane closed at 24th and Burnside, so that people will be able to get up to the area around the bridge where all three lanes will be closed. And there will be a dance performance on the bridge, mm-hmm. choreographed by Michael Curry. There will be...
And Body Vox are doing it.
Body Vox right. is doing that.
This is about 9:30 in the morning.
After I think around 9.
9, okay.
9, and there will be various important people talking about the project. If you sign up for it, there's a free pancake breakfast, and there's a shuttle that you have to sign up for people who don't want to hike up to the site. And after the ceremony, the bridge will be open. You can walk up to Southwest Fisher and loop around and get onto the Wildwood Trail mm-hmm. and then go across the bridge.
So all that is at portlandpf.org. That's the Parks Foundation's website. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Ed Carpenter, a public artist who designed the Barbara Walker Crossing, and that opens on October 27th in the morning. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO, Ed.
My pleasure, Joseph.
Andy Wawo looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Wawo, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Muertos PDX Dia de los Muertos celebration on Friday, November 1st and Saturday, November 2nd from 4 to 9 p.m. at St. Andrew Catholic Church in Portland. This two-day event celebrates the ancient tradition of welcoming back loved ones who have passed on. There will be altar building, Muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, drink, and live musical performances. It's a benefit for Transiciones, a program at Mount Hood Community College that has helped Latino women for close to 20 years in